And good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live. I am your host, Anna Edwards, and today is Monday. Today, I'd like to introduce our guest, Lisa Alexander. She is the mother of a young man with autism who has been convicted of assault on a police officer and is now serving a nearly two-year sentence, I believe, in maximum security prison. Lisa, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on the show, Anna, and taking an interest in getting the word out to the local community.
Yeah, this case, I'd read about it, and of course, information has been circulating through Facebook and other places. And as soon as you read about it, of course, your heart goes out to you and goes out to your son. And it seems to be tapping into a larger dynamic, and you and I talked a little bit about this, where more and more attention is being paid to autism as a condition that more and more people are beginning to be aware of and to understand some of the repercussions for the rest of the community not having any awareness about this condition. So I think what I'd like is if you could just tell us a little bit about Nellie. And then we can talk about what happened and then what's going to happen next Monday. So give us an introduction to your son.
Okay, Nellie is a very wonderful and loving child. He was obviously, you know, when you have a child with a disability, raising them, there are going to be some challenges with that, especially since he had a late diagnosis. He was not diagnosed with autism until he was 13 years old. So a lot of the early intervention and therapies are available now because there's a lot more awareness than there was, 20 years ago when Nellie started, you know, when he was born. He was misdiagnosed with ADHD, which I knew that he didn't have. It's our lives. He's a very loving and sweet, caring person that really struggled on his own with familial support to try to understand who he was. And it was kind of difficult for him to do that because he didn't know what autism was. I mean, none of us really knew what it was. And even after we got the diagnosis, it's like, okay, what do we do next? Okay, we get the IEP tailored, you know, to fit that, and that's, we're just talking about education, the education piece. There's also a huge social piece that needed to be addressed that, you know, wasn't addressed. So, in a sense, like I said, life wasn't easy for us, although he's a wonderful child and we've had, a great life. It's always a challenge when you're raising any child with a special disability or a special need, whether it's autism or any other disability. So life wasn't easy before this, but it certainly, Nellie does not deserve what he's going through right now. And he's not a criminal, and he's not a thug. He's raised in an upper, middle-class family, a military family, and actually living in Stafford County was his first experience. And the military brought our family to Stafford County. His first experience actually being in an environment where it wasn't a smaller environment of Department of Defense schools. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit about Nellie, and he loves his family very much.
Yeah, yes. You can see on the website, which is avoiceforNellie.com, you know, he's perfectly lovely, and he has a lovely attitude, you know, about him. And it seems hard to imagine when you're looking at those pictures that he is currently in prison. And the circumstances seem inane, and at the same time, they seem unfortunately really familiar when you talk about the broader generalization of what can happen to young black men in our communities.
Right.
So could you talk about what happened?
Sure. I would absolutely say that I think I've been very vocal. I'm very honest about, you know, my feelings about what happened with Nellie that day. Mm-hmm. There was no crime. What catapulted all of this was my son sitting underneath the tree of a library, which is public property. Mm-hmm. There was no crime committed. He'd done nothing wrong, and a false call was made in compensated in that there was a suspicious-looking black male, and he may have a gun. That story, when once you get down into the weeds of it and the actual testimonies and, you know, what the different people had to say that made the phone call, their stories don't even line up. So, I mean, the gist of it is that he is a person of color that was, I believe, profiled because in every, you know, every ounce of my being, I do not believe that if that was a young white man, you know, sitting underneath a tree of a library, that any, you know, he would not, that would not be considered suspicious behavior. Right. So what happened, you know, after that was very unfortunate, and was led up to an incident where he was confronted by a police officer, and he was searched. There was no weapon found on him whatsoever. And at that point, things should have been, you know, I think it should have been over, you know, mm-hmm. and it was not. So those that we have grown and learned and conditioned to trust, to protect and serve us, the community, to protect us, you know, from criminals. My son was not a criminal, and you know, he was treated very badly, and a situation was escalated mm-hmm. To the point where there was a fight that ensued. But, you know, you'll read some reports. I mean, there's lots of information online about this, but there, of course, you know, everyone's not going to be on your side.
Sure.
You know, people are saying, oh, well, he, you know, fought the police, so he should be in jail. Well, what they don't realize is, you know, I have all the documents. I sat through the court hearings. I have the police's statement. Mm-hmm. You know, I have everything, you know. And if I'm going to go all out there, the bottom line is my son did not attack the police without, you know, he did not attack the police at all. He was attacked by the police mm-hmm. in an attempt to, the police then once the no weapon was found on him, the police stated that he tried to place him under arrest because he would not give him his name. So, I mean, there may be some people that would say, okay, well, why didn't he just give him his name? And this is where his autism comes in, because the kind of the lens that they view right. life through is very black and white.
Right.
You know, so he complied with the request of the officer. There wasn't any issue. And I must add that there was a SWAT team out looking for my son. There was an officer, the officer that engaged him in a very private area. You know, so there was absolutely no threat to him, or if there was, he sure did not proceed in that manner, that there was a threat to him, because he didn't call for backup. He didn't say, hey, you know, especially when he wasn't a part of the original search party.
Right.
8 schools were locked down. This is serious.
The reason that there was all of this attention, though, was because they were looking for somebody else. Isn't that right? There was another.
Well, I don't think they were looking. That has never come out that they were looking for anyone else.
Oh, it seems so odd to me that they would have called out the SWAT team and closed down schools just on the basis of a report of one suspicious-looking male sitting under a tree at the library.
A black male. That's the key word here.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And this is something that as much as people don't want to hear this, you know, they need to hear it.
Yeah.
Because this goes on all over this country. And we are not post-racial America, you know, because we have a black president. We don't get to put these things behind us.
Right.
I mean, I think that black people have done very little since the civil rights movements, and we stand on the shoulders of those that came before us, and we owe them a lot.
Yeah.
You know, we're not done,
yeah.
And, you know, we should not stop.
Well,
when these injustices are occurring, then it is our absolute duty to, mm-hmm. in some way, stand up and to help,
yep.
you know, fix it and say we're not going to take it anymore, because unless we stand up and say, you know, we're not going to take it, we can't blame anybody. You know what I'm saying? We cannot blame anyone but ourselves for not organizing and making our voices be heard.
Well, one of the things I wanted to tap into, too, is that, as you mentioned before, you've been in the military. Nellie comes of a military family. Your relationship to authority, certainly to governmental authority, and your, I would assume, respect for the rule of law and those institutions. As you mentioned, the police are there to protect and to serve. What I'm imagining is that that played some role in your, you know, horror of what your son was put through. That may have been potentially a part of sort of a realization that, you know, that you have to be that careful, even of the police, even of, you know, those figures that are supposed to represent the rule of law, and yet what happens in this dynamic then lays out exactly what you have just said, which is that we are not in any way done with the civil rights struggle, with an anti-racism struggle, that it's the institutions that still have this to deal with, and that organize is the only way that the people are going to be able to address it.
Right. You know, step it up and let their voices be heard. And you are absolutely right. I do hold civil servants, because I was one for so many years, and that was many years ago. I, you know, got out of the Army in 2005, and I spent 11 years in the Army. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, you know, as a civil servant myself, you know, our job is to basically keep this country safe. And if we're held to such a high standard, and our culture was not that of such of aggression, mm-hmm. you know, although we had guns and weapons and we had to train and all these things, you know, you would be court-martialed if, you know, you left your weapon sitting somewhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, we have the Geneva Convention that governs our action in a war zone where we are dealing with known enemies, okay? We have also rules of engagement. You can't do anything. So you really can't protect, you know, there's a very high moral standard of how we conduct ourselves, you know, around the globe. So there is a real problem for me, like you stated, when within our own borders that we have this seemingly culture, a police culture that is just, you know, for lack of a better term, rogue. Where are the checks and balances? Mm-hmm. I expect more, and they should not be turned on their own citizens. And all too often we hear of all of these police gunning people down in the streets. We're hearing more and more about disabled. We already know the story about racial profiling. We know that that is all too common. And it, again, you know, it needs to stop. And I'm not saying this just because it's my child. Of course, it's hit home a lot harder. But I've always supported different causes that related to injustices. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they have to do a better job, and we have to make them accountable for doing a better job.
Now, you have been working, you know, clearly you've been working very hard and very diligently, and I want to go ahead and, you know, before we break for a quick station identification, I want to just introduce the fact that next Monday, the 15th, there is going to be a demonstration, and you will, in fact, have petitions to deliver to the governor. Do you want to talk for a minute about that?
Yes, currently we have a petition on change.org, and we're asking Governor Bob McDonnell to pardon my son, and so that he can go on to go to the treatment that his defense attorneys requested at his sentencing, which was basically to go on to a treatment facility that was not, you know, is not from the taxpayers' money, but a private hospital, mm-hmm. that so that he can begin to recover. And so that, and then after that, to go on to a school. We want that initiated as soon as possible. And that's the goal, is Neely should never have been in jail in the first place. Mm-hmm. But this is, at this point, this is where we are. We can't look back. We need to look forward. And what is the most productive thing that we can do? We have over 1,700 signatures, and this petition's been up for a little over a month. I think that's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I've been getting a lot of great feedback on that. Plus, there is another petition that I have that has 2,700 signatures from another website that all is going to be packaged and delivered, you know, to the governor's office on the 15th when we do the rally. Mm-hmm. And we need a lot of support. We need people to come out, even from the Richmond community. Mm-hmm. Although this didn't happen in Richmond, I would be very appreciative of anyone that's listening to this. Because, you know, just bodies show support of the cause.
That's right. Well, let me just take a moment to let our listeners know that they are listening to The Defenders Live. This is your host, Anna Edwards. And if you want to learn more about The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, please visit our website at defendersfje.org. And then to keep abreast of current events, please visit our blog, which is defendersfje.blogspot.com. You can also give us a call at 804-644-5834 and send us an email at defendersfje@hotmail.com. And if you want to learn more about Nellie Latson's case, you can visit www.avoiceforNellie.com. There's also a Facebook page, which I think you can get to from avoiceforNellie.com as well. And we are talking today to Nellie's mother, Lisa Alexander. And Lisa, one of the things that I wanted to get a little bit into for the second half of the interview is autism, is what it is about autism that can that affects behavior that the general public is not necessarily going to understand. I will say that I know a couple of people who have either children or siblings who are autistic, and it is very individualized, as you say. Each person deals with the condition differently, or it affects them differently. And it is interesting how the variations of it could appear to be to some people simply somebody who doesn't know how to behave in public, or is more easily agitated, and you know. But a lot of people throughout history have dealt with what we can now diagnose as autism. Can you talk a little bit about it, and maybe in Nellie's case, and then generalize it out to how parents of autistic children are having to address this issue?
Well, the first thing that I'd like to say about that is that one statement that you made is that you knew different families with autism. Autism has grown at a very alarming rate, so there are very few people, I think, that's out there. They may not know the exact, you know, having to deal with the, an autistic child on a daily basis, but because of the rise in the number of children, families, you know, that are having autistic children, this has become a problem. So everybody, at least most people, know someone or either has an autistic child themselves. Mm-hmm. Some families have more than one. Mm-hmm. Within the spectrum, it's like an umbrella. When you say autism, mm-hmm. it's an umbrella. So you have, it varies, and they're all individuals, just like, you know, each of us have our own fingerprints. Mm-hmm. No two autistic people are alike. My son specifically suffers under that umbrella. Asperger syndrome and PDD-NOS, which is pervasive developmental disorder, not otherwise specified. So they can go from nonverbal, they can range from nonverbal all the way to high functioning. So you can have someone that they said Albert Einstein was autistic. They said Bill Gates may be autistic. And we look at the accomplishments that they make. We know that for sure the movie was made about Temple Grandin. It was an mm-hmm. HBO movie, and you saw her contributions to society and what she was able to do. What we see with autism is we see a lot of the higher functioning autistic people. But, you know, my son may be very good in certain areas, but unable to tie his shoes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's really no way to group them all together. They share a lot of characteristics, such as social skills, conditioning, and not really knowing how to interact with society at all times. So behavioral modification is needed. They need to be taught. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of what is called mimicking, which is because they don't instinctively, like we do, or, you know, most people in society, we know how to pick up on different cues and things like that. They don't. Everything is kind of like black and white for them. And also realize that we don't have all the information on autism right now. A lot of research is still being done, and these things are just starting to come to the forefront. So, yes, while they share a lot of traits in common, such as feminine, having tics, some have aggression issues, some have overstimulation issues. I mean, we can run the whole gamut.
Sure.
Social interaction issues is one of them. There's a lot of issues, okay, that, you know, comes from that. But people get autism confused with mental health issues, not saying that there's anything wrong with mental health. I just think that we need to keep everything in context because, as you can tell by our conversation, I'm very much in support of just people with disabilities in general. So it doesn't matter what your disability is. But people on the spectrum, autism is not a mental health disease.
Right.
And, you know, it is a neurodiversity, neurological brain mapping, processing type of a disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, like, okay, so you're born with autism and you're probably going to die with autism. You can't give a person with autism a pill and make autism go away.
Right.
It's just their way of viewing the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost just like they're different. And they have so much to offer. They're usually very wonderful and very loving people.
Right.
That is it.
Yeah, I was going to say that as you're talking about it that way, it makes me think that, you know, you come up against all of the dynamics surrounding our growing knowledge about autism and how common it is in society. We just, you know, haven't had a term for it before. And even as we go through the transition of having a term for it and figuring out what that means, then we may eventually go back to, well, this is just another variation on the human theme. And you know, we'll learn to live with those variations. That clashes then against, you know, with a body like the police department, which seems in certain circumstances to be on a hair trigger, for example, with young black men.
Right.
So, you know, if they're on a hair trigger for young black men, then they've got no room for any subtleties of behavior, of interaction, of, you know, of what, how a scenario should play out. And so in a dynamic like that, you know, my head sort of explodes because it's just tragedy in the making, no matter what you do.
You're absolutely right, because like you stated, we're all very well aware of the racial profiling that goes on within the police culture of our black males. We're very well aware of the shoot and deaths of our completely functioning black males, okay, that have done nothing wrong. You know, like the young man up in, you know, Pace University with a glowing future and was doing everything right, you know, by, you know, according to what this society has told us we should do to be productive individuals. He was in college, and they shot him to death. You know, I feel sorry for his family, and I pray for them, but he's gone. And there's so many millions of stories like that out there. And unfortunately, what happened with my son is that, you know, this is like a dual issue because he has two strikes against him. Not only is he a black male, he's a black male with a disability, okay? So he may not necessarily know what is the proper, you know what I'm saying, thing to do.
Sure.
And then once we actually got around to the judicial system, the color of his skin, really, and this is my opinion, this is Lisa Alexander's opinion, that the judicial system did not. And I mean, you can read in the Washington Post where the prosecutor has actually stated that his autism, I mean, this is after expert witness after expert witness after expert witness has been marched into the courtroom, stated that his autism has nothing to do with him, with what happened that day. He is simply a violent man.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
Exactly. So the color of his skin has trumped his autism.
Yeah.
So not saying that autism is a pass for you to go out and commit a crime, but he did not commit a crime.
Right.
And so after the incident happened, I think that certain issues should have been examined and they were not. You know, they started down a wrong path, and they continued down the wrong path and refused. And as a result, you know, the many years of work that I've done with my child, you know, he's sitting in the penitentiary with hardened criminals, not knowing why, you know, this is happening to him.
Sure.
Right.
Sure. We, you know, as usual, we get to this point and we're sort of rapidly coming towards the end of the show. And I wanted to honor your wish to have your daughter read a quote. So if this is a good moment, I'd like to go ahead and do that.
Okay, yes. I'm going to have my daughter read a quote. The quote is by Haile Selassie. And I think it's very fitting to this situation because, again, like I spoke to you again earlier, it was about bringing community together and people coming together. And I think it's very poignant and very powerful. So I'm going to hand the phone to my daughter. Her name is Camilla, and she's going to read the quote from Haile Selassie for your viewers. Okay, just one moment.
Throughout history, it has been the inaction of those who could have acted, the indifference of those who should have known better, the silence of the voice of justice when it mattered most, that has made it possible for evil to triumph.
Thank you, Camilla.
Okay.
That
very
was
powerful.
Yeah, that was very powerful, and I don't want to editorialize beyond that because, you know, to have the younger sister of Nelly come on and read that particular quote is obviously a very telling tribute to her brother and to the situation that your family is living with. And I think that it also speaks to the situation that potentially many, many families are living with, whether the circumstances are exactly the same or not. And so I want to thank Camilla for reading that and to you for obviously your dedication to your son and to the by virtue of that to other families who are dealing with these dynamics. So Lisa, if you could again remind people about the event and then where they can possibly contact you or look up more information.
Okay, sure. The event is going to be, they can get all the information for the event at avoiceforneely.com. And I'll spell that out as www.avoiceforneely, AVOICEFORNELI.com. And all the information is on there. And for the people that are on Facebook, there's also a tag where they can join his Facebook page, which is called Fight Against Autism and Police Injustice. But again, his website is a very centralized location where a lot of information is shared, and there's also a contact form in case anyone wanted to contact me directly through my email. They can just fill out the contact form and send a message out. And I also just want to you know, really urge, you know, if you're listening, and, you know, I'm a mother, I'm fighting really hard for my son. It's been a very long, hard year and some months that my son was never released from jail with all of this. You know, please go to his website, read his story. There's a lot we haven't covered. Obviously, we can't cover a lot in 30 minutes. There's only so much. But I think we've got the gist of the message out. Please take a moment, go and take a look at his website. And I hope you feel moved to come out on Monday, August the 15th, while we have a very peaceful demonstration at, you know, Governor Bob McDonald's office to show a show of force of, you know, support behind this and to try to get Nelly pardoned and released from jail so he can move on to a hospital and get the therapy that we had requested initially. And that is the reason also why I thought that I wanted my daughter to read that quote, because, you know, it's the inaction of those, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We can take action. Mm-hmm. So let's do that. And, you know, please come out and support this event. And I appreciate it. I know everyone's not going to be able to be there, but I do appreciate your support, even if it's in spirit. That is also welcomed.
That's
so
right.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you again, Lisa, and thank your daughter, Camilla. And we will keep people posted. This information will be available on our website as well, so people can have links directly to your website. And just once again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out today to share this story. And hopefully people will connect from their own experiences as well and find comfort and support in your struggle, and therefore offer you their support as well. And we look forward. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so very much, Anna, for having me on the show. It means a lot to me. Thank you very much for giving me this platform to share our story.
You bet. All right, and I want to thank you listeners for tuning in today, and remind you to check out the WRIR.org website and the defendersfje.blogspot.com.